welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. We're broadcasting this week from the Center for American Ingenuity and Progress here at Car Talk Plaza.
You know, a lot of people are worried right now about the state of the economy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, things are pretty bad.
Oh, yeah, things are so bad that my brother has two bums living in his Fiat.
Well, it is a duplex.
Oh, it's true. And when things are slow here at home, inevitably questions are raised about, you know, America's ability to compete with other countries. It's
right.
Always an issue, right?
It's true. I mean, we hear all these stories about how we're falling behind in math and falling behind in science. We're not inventing stuff that the world needs.
Well, have no fear.
No?
A brief survey of the internet by our staff this week confirms that when it comes to ingenious products and brilliant solutions to pressing problems, America is still the world's foremost idea factory. How's that? Did that put your mind at ease?
Yeah, and we have evidence to back this up, don't we? Do we?
Absolutely. The following are real products invented, we presume, by real Americans for sale right now for the benefit of all mankind.
For instance.
Well, for instance.
Yeah.
You ready for this?
Yeah.
The electric yodeling pickle. A 6.5-inch long plastic pickle, and when you press a button, it what? Yodels!
Dead out! Or a Titanic and iceberg ice cube tray.
I can see it now.
You put the water in, throw it in the freezer, and then you, too, can serve drinks with a sinking Titanic in the glass. I want one of them.
Hey, this is great. We found a men's underwear repair kit featuring safety pins, duct tape, and underwear whiteout.
That's disgusting. Although it might sell well during the recession.
All right, well, you don't like that one? Here's one that, on its own, could put America back on top all by itself. You ready for this?
Yeah.
A motorized ice cream cone.
Huh? What are you talking about?
Too lazy to turn the cone while you lick it? Have no fear. This cone is motorized, so it spins itself. You just stick out your tongue, and the ice cream spins around.
Hey, I think that could have automotive uses. Get a steering wheel mount for that thing, and it's a hands-free ice cream cone. Call GM, will you, Dougie?
Oh, yeah, they'll get right on that. I'm sure that's what they're looking for. Now, here's one that you might be interested in. It's a bath towel on which each end is clearly labeled. One end says face, the other says butt. So you know which side of the tile to use, or more importantly, which side you used yesterday.
Brilliant. Where would the world be without American ingenuity?
Oh, I don't know, but I do know they'd have to rotate their own ice cream cones. Anyway, if you have a question about your car that calls for an ingenious or inventive solution, give us a try.
Yeah.
No promises, but you can try us. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi.
Hi. Who's this?
Alicia.
Hi, Alicia with an A.
A-L-I-C-I-A?
Actually, it's E-L-I-S-H-A.
Oh, you know, I sense it was an E.
It is.
Oh, because it's Alicia.
Alicia.
Alicia, yeah.
Wow, cool.
Okay.
Where are you from?
Baltimore, Maryland.
All right. What's going on, Alicia?
Well, I have a 2004 Honda Element, and it's making a scritchety sound.
A scritchety sound.
From sort of the dash windshield region.
Really?
And the best way that I can describe it is there are a bunch of mice, and they're wearing stilettos, and they're tap dancing really, really fast on a marble floor.
Are they doing like a Busby Berkeley thing, or are they just kind of random tap dancing?
Well, it's sort of random. It's in and out, and behind them are a bunch of other mice singing opera. Again, they're random, in and out, too.
So it's like...
That's exactly it.
And this happens when you're driving?
This happens when I'm driving, usually on the beltway, but not like at a certain speed or around a certain turn. It just sort of comes and goes.
But if you're not, if the engine's running, but you're not going very fast.
It doesn't happen.
It doesn't.
Does
so you have to be moving.
Yeah.
What's the minimum speed?
Maybe 50, 55.
Oh, 50.
It's only really when I get up like on beltway speed.
Gotcha.
And how long has this been going on?
Well, here's the interesting thing. It's been only happening like for maybe 3 or 4 months. And this spring, I had my windshield replaced. Oh. But it didn't happen right after I had my windshield replaced. It, like I said, it just happened like a couple months ago it started.
Do you wear glasses?
Do I wear glasses?
Yeah.
No, uh-uh.
I would start wearing glasses.
Okay.
I think the windshield's about to fall out.
Oh, really?
Well, I think the scritchy noise is the windshield moving around.
Moving around.
Well, I need a helmet too then, don't I?
Oh, yeah, that was coming
You're
next.
Need
yeah.
a helmet. Yeah.
Oh, I just assumed you drove with a helmet. Yeah, I think the windshield was perhaps installed improperly. You know, it's held in with an adhesive.
Uh-huh.
And it may be, did they do this windshield replacement at your house?
No, they did it at the dealership. It was a really long process. The first people, they didn't install it right. The second people, they installed it right, but they had to reinstall it again.
Okay.
I think the second people
didn't install it either.
They didn't install it right either.
Oh,
and it took
man.
A while for it to loosen up, but now it's loose.
And I think the reason it happens at high speed, and particularly if you change lanes, is that you're flexing the body, you know? The body's flexing, and there's also a lot of force on the windshield because of the air that's hitting it.
And I'll bet you if you're driving along and you get all this stuff going on, if you put your fingers on that windshield, you'll feel it moving.
Or maybe you can get it to stop.
Okay.
Here's what you do. Do you have a toilet plunger?
Yeah, actually I do.
Attach that puppy to the windshield. You can actually pull the windshield in or push it out, and I bet you can make it stop.
So I need to be driving with glasses, helmet, and toilet
plunger.
And a toilet plunger.
There you go. You got to be a sight, Alicia.
Yeah.
Okay.
And when the police stop you, they're going to wonder what the heck is going on.
just play them the tape of the show. That's all. But I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
That makes sense.
No. Yeah, and I don't know why, you know, you should ask the dealership to check to see if there are any service bulletins about windshield replacements. Well, why did you have the first windshield replaced?
Well, because I had a crack in it, and as it turns out, the windshield design was defective, and so it was on a recall, the windshield.
Uh-huh.
So. Yeah, so there may be something going on with these that defies proper installation. This is the first we've heard of it. But
okay.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's something going on. I don't have any hard evidence.
Okay.
You know, but there may be something going on that they're not telling you.
Well, great. Thank you. I appreciate
Make
it.
Make sure to wear that football helmet. See you later.
Yeah, good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. A lawyer on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Dave Purnell from Hamden, Connecticut.
Hi, Dave.
Where'd you say you were from?
Hamden, Connecticut, next town north of New Haven.
Oh, we know. Yeah. I know exactly where it is.
Yeah, you usually drive through it on your way to New York.
Exactly. And gee, you keep right on going.
Yeah, exactly. Don't look back in the mirror.
Right. What's up?
So I've got a 2002 Audi Allroad, the 2.7 twin turbo.
Oh, yes.
6-speed manual. I believe my clutch is slipping.
Oh.
So let me describe to you. I was driving in New York City the other day on the lovely Merritt Parkway, which was not a parking lot at the time, and trying to overtake a couple cars, engaging the turbo in 5th and 6th gear. The RPMs go up, but the car does not accelerate.
Oh, Dave.
And the car's got 70,000 miles on it. Actually, just
I was going to ask you, how many miles did you get on this clutch before you junked it?
I don't know. We picked it up with 56K, so we've put 13 on it.
Oh, so the first owner
could have wrecked it.
Taught 6 teenage kids how to drive on this thing.
Yeah,
worse than that, off-road. It is, after all, called an all-road.
Yeah. Yes, it's true.
And people don't buy these. I mean, with the extra ground clearance this thing has and all the other fine attributes, the all-wheel drive and, of course, the twin turbos, which you really need for off-roading. People buy these so they can drive in and over the mountains.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I'm willing to bet that somebody, maybe it was you, learned to drive stick shift on this, because these are usually pretty good clutches.
Yeah, I've been driving stick since I turned 16 and got licensed, so it's definitely not me.
So it was the previous...
a slipping clutch.
Yeah, it's a slipping clutch. So I'm wondering, is it the whole clutch assembly?
Oh, yeah. You're going to do everything. You would never want to do this clutch without replacing everything.
Okay.
And I don't know what it's going to cost you, but what do you think, Dave? How much money do you think this is going to hurt you?
Well, the dealership said around 5K, so yeah.
Wow, no, I was going to guess at 3.
Well, I can probably find an independent to do it for cheaper.
Yeah,
I would recommend if you do, that you make sure they use genuine Audi parts.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and then find out where this guy, what his home address is, too.
Because you may have to break his kneecaps.
You may have to visit him in the middle of the night.
And but if someone offers to do the clutch job in some mall parking lot,
right.
I wouldn't accept that.
Well, unless it's like 800. Oh, geez, Dave. Too bad. But I don't think it's a 5K job, but it could be.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, it could be.
You're still smiling, I can see. So.
Oh, I am.
You haven't been reduced to tears yet.
No, but I mean, the car's great because it's, it can drive on the Autobahn but also go in the desert. And people ask me if that's necessary, and I say, no, but who cares?
Well, you're going to find out who cares when you fork over that 5Gs. But you made this easy because you did have the classic symptom of a slipping clutch. You step on the gas in high gear,
and
the engine revs up, but the car doesn't go faster, and that's the kiss of death.
Okay.
And there's no adjustment on this clutch. It's self-adjusting.
Right.
So, nice. Hey, have some nice holidays, Dave.
I mean, you could wait until it does this in first and second gear, but I wouldn't.
Yeah.
No, you're going to do it like today.
We'll get it done as soon as possible.
All right, see you later, man.
Thanks, gentlemen.
888 Car Talk. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Eric from Viola, Illinois, and I drive a 94 Honda Civic, and it's got problems.
Eric, awesome. We're so glad to hear from you. 94 Civic, Viola, Illinois.
So I'm driving down the road this summer, and the air conditioner blower, it just stops blowing. And I'm like, oh, man, that sucks. Well, I just put my window down, no big deal. It turned back on once, and then it shut back off when winter shows up. So now I'm like, oh, no, what am I going to do? Because, you kind of need your defroster and stuff to be working in the winter.
So let me get this right. So in the summertime, when the air conditioner failed, what failed was the fact that it wasn't blowing the cold air out.
Correct. It wasn't blowing. I could still push buttons and like the lights on the dashboard, it would change. It says it's blowing on your feet or blowing on your defrost or whatever. So,
and when you was there a hint of cold air or was it you didn't notice?
I didn't.
You were
notice.
Too depressed.
and so I jimmy around like the fan switch, the controller, whatever, and nothing
happened.
Move around. I slapped the dash, nothing happened. Reached up underneath and just kind of grabbed and kind of shook things around, nothing happened.
Just anything, so, right? You just grabbed anything underneath there. It's just figuring.
Anything you can find, yeah.
Yeah.
It was off for about a month, and then all of a sudden, one day I'm driving, kicks back on. I'm like, hey, it works again.
And all the speeds worked?
All speeds worked.
Okay.
Then winter comes, it kicks off again. I'm like, oh no, what am I going to do? So I went down to the junkyard. Right?
Oh, good.
And I got the whole control thing for your dashboard.
Oh, that's too bad.
It was $35. I figure, $35 is not a big deal, all right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and you spent the rest of the afternoon putting it in.
Yeah, and my knuckles are still bloody from it. So I got it, and I put the new one in, and voila, nothing happened.
Really?
Nothing happened. So I took my old one and just started looking at it, taking it apart, and I found the switch that goes with the blower. It's an independent switch, and it comes apart. And I took the switch off. And I look back at the piece that I took out of the console, and I notice that, holy cow, the serial number from my switch has melted into the plastic on the thing above. So I'm like, okay, my switch is getting hot.
Whoa, good thinking.
So I'm like, well, maybe that's it. And so, anyway, the new one I put in, it had the new switch. But still, nothing happened.
All right. Can I stop you? You can continue. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I'm done. Basically, right now, I'm standing outside my mechanic's place, and I'm like, this is it. I'm done. I'm giving up. And so I'm about to go in.
You're about to go in.
Well, you guys got to talk me off the
edge. We're going to talk you down? We're going to talk you off the cliff?
Talk you down. Okay.
Well, it's too late to return that switch that you bought from the junkyard.
So oh, yeah, that's gone.
You own that now.
That's 35
But I got to ask a simple question. If I imagine you live in a house that has lights, right? And if you walked into a room and you threw the light switch on and the light didn't work, would you get a screwdriver and take apart the light switch, or would you get on a chair and take the light bulb out?
I'd go for the light bulb.
Yeah, except you didn't.
Okay, I went to the library and got the book and says how to replace the blower, and I'm like, whoa, drain the air conditioning unit? No way. It's like $900. No way I'm going to do that.
Well, but that's probably what it is.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so, and I don't think it's that, 94 Civic, I don't think it's that complicated to replace this blower motor. I think it's actually pretty easy and comes out from under the dash.
But it came back on before.
It did. It had in the business what we call a Lazarus. Came back from the dead, and it happens.
Yeah.
It happens.
And it could happen any day.
But when you were banging and groping and pulling and smacking things kind of at random.
But if you had
banged on that blower motor, chances are you could have gotten it to work even for a few seconds. And of course, the real test is you put a voltmeter on the two wires that are leading to the blower motor, and when you actuate the switch, you try to find out if you have voltage there. If you have voltage going from the switch through the resistor to the motor, then in fact the motor should work, and if it isn't working, it's the motor. So I'm pretty sure you need a blower motor. I think come on, spend a weekend under there. It's not that cold yet.
Yeah, go right back to the same junkyard.
Here's the test. You go to the junkyard and see if you can take the motor out of their thing easily enough. If you can, then you're ready to go, man.
I'll give it a try.
Either that or you're going to stock up on Bronco Nagurski long underwear. We're having a sale on our website as we speak. See ya, Eric.
Good luck, Eric.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. It's time once again to probe my brother's brain to see if he remembers last week's puzzler. Any clue, Piston Puss?
Not the slightest.
Well, you know, the good thing about probing my brother's brain is it never takes very long. Anyway, the puzzler was about an unusual race.
Are you insulting my ancestors again?
No. This was a car race.
A car race?
Yeah, the Geek 500. And I'll be back with the whole story.
Yeah, and we'll take more of your car questions, too.
Right, so stay tuned. We'll be back in just a minute. Every station wagon. What can you say about the quality today of the automotive industry? The choice is driving me insane. She wants a Volvo. Is it peace of mind? She wants a Volvo. Which front wheel drive? She wants. And even though Rip Van Winkle slaps the snooze button whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR National Public Radio. Hey, if you find yourself thinking, you know, this show gets worse every time I hear it, why not check out some classic shows from our archives, like when we used to be good?
When was that?
It's just a figure of speech, you know?
You can download any show from the Car Talk archives at cartalk.com. Just click where it says, listen to the show.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler. Now, the crux of this puzzler was sent in by a fellow named Hugh Rollins, and here it is. Back in the 60s, I had the misfortune of living across the street from the world's biggest and most insufferable motorhead. Like, hardly a week went by without my having to listen to the guy's latest automotive exploit. As luck would have it, we had just outside of town, an abandoned stretch of highway. It was straight and flat for miles and the perfect place for my neighbor and his ilk to race each other in their Chevys and Dodges and, you know, Pontiacs and Fords and whatnot. I was never invited to race, even though my car had a four-speed manual transmission. My neighbor and his pals looked with scorn, disdain, and maybe even pity at my car because it was a Saab with a three-cylinder engine. More gears than cylinders. They also poked fun at my pocket protector and my slide rule, too.
Yeah.
Well, to shut them up, I challenged my neighbor to a race one day. My Saab versus his muscle car. Right there, right now, on that highway to nowhere, just one condition, we race in reverse. That's right, backing up. He thought about it for a second and then said, sure, what do I care? I'll race backwards, forwards, I'll race you any way you want. Now, I didn't possess any particular prowess insofar as driving in reverse, nor was I aware of any particular handicap on his part. So at high noon, there we were, engines running, our rear bumpers inched up to the starting line, awaiting the signal, and then we're off. Within a minute, he was so far ahead, I thought he'd driven off the road. But little by little, I closed the gap until finally I caught up to him and actually passed him. His engine was straining. It was on the verge of self-destruction with that tachometer at the red line as he watched me cross the finish line. They all stood there in awe. I think I even pumped my fist with my slide rule. You know, I don't remember exactly, but I do know I popped two buttons on my flannel shirt that day. The question is, how did I do it? How did I beat him in reverse with my Saab?
Yeah.
Yeah, here's what I did.
I like it.
As I drove up to that abandoned stretch of highway.
Sure.
I turned the engine off. okay?
Mm-hmm.
Let the car coast, put the transmission in neutral. With the car coasting, I stepped on the clutch, put the transmission in reverse, turned the key on, and popped the clutch, started the engine.
Yeah.
The car was going forward, but the engine was running backward. You say, how could that be? Well, that Saab three-cylinder was a two-cycle engine, and it could run either forward or backward. It didn't care. Whichever way you turned it, it started. Uh-huh. You can't do that with a four-cycle engine, but you can do that with your chainsaw or your weed whacker or whatever if you could turn the crankshaft the other way. So now I had one forward gear and four reverse gears.
Uh-huh.
So even though he beat me out of the gate, I shifted from first to second to third, all the time going faster and faster backwards until I caught up to
and
him.
And meanwhile, he's in reverse.
He's in reverse, and the governor and his transmission probably wouldn't let him go over 60 miles an hour. And that tachometer was right at the red line. He was getting ready to shoot a piston through the hood. And I passed him and won the race. Pretty cute, eh?
Excellent.
Do we have a winner?
We certainly do. Our winner this week is Therese Cooper from Portland, Oregon. And for having her answer selected at random from among all the correct answers that we got, Therese gets a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at CarTalk.com, with which she can get one of our brand new boxed sets.
Box sets of what?
Oh, they're just box sets. Real nice boxes, though.
No, come on, man. They got to something in them.
They're box sets of Car Talk CDs.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah. Anyway, congratulations, Therese. You are this week's Puzzler winner.
And if your name is not Therese, don't despair. We have a new Puzzler coming up in the third half of the show. In the meantime, if you have a car question, we're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Patrick.
Hi, Patrick. Hey. Where are you from, man?
Well, Bennington, Vermont. For the moment, I'm traveling around this country.
I used to live in Bennington, Vermont.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah, they loved it
well,
up
they,
there.
They ran me out on a rail, but the feeling was mutual. It's an idyllic place to live if you don't mind 10 months of winter, but other than that, it was charming. Anyway, so you're traveling around, and currently you're in Bennington.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's
and,
it.
And where are you really from?
Well, from the old country.
Old Ireland.
Yeah.
Oh, you are from Ireland.
With a name like Patrick and that
where
accent.
Where else?
Yeah.
That's it. Anyway, my problem is I have a 2002 car, and I'm not even sure what name to call it.
Well, it's an 02 something or other.
It's a Beetle anyway, or a Bug. What do you call them?
A Beetle, Volkswagen Beetle.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
The starter sometimes waits going after I starting about once every four times.
What does it do?
It waits engaged for about a minute.
Oh, it stays engaged.
Yeah.
So you turn the key and it goes, it starts and it's still going.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Are you sure that the key has returned to what's called the run position?
Oh, it does return, yeah. And it's still, but still it waits crying.
And how long does it take before it kicks out?
Oh, about only just a quarter of a minute, I'd say.
Oh, that's like 15 seconds.
Yeah.
16, actually.
16. Oh, yeah, Vermont, the minutes are
a minute.
It lasts a long time.
A little longer. it's either the starter or it's the ignition.
Yeah.
And I think I would probably, have somebody pop the ignition switch.
Yeah.
And without replacing the whole, lock assembly and all that, see if it, in fact, is just the switch. And the reason I say that is we replace a fair number of these for this reason. Even though the switch is returning physically, or seems to be,
it's not really disengaging.
It's not disengaging. So it's like you were holding the key to the crank position, even though in your mind you've let go. You've released it.
Yeah.
So that thing that you put the key into, that's the lock.
Yeah, right.
Okay,
yeah.
And that lock actuates the switch, which is behind it. So you can have somebody just put a switch on it and actuate the switch separately.
Okay,
and see if that fixes it. And if it does, then you need to replace the switch. If that doesn't do it, then you need the starter motor.
Yeah.
Yeah, so where's the next stop for you besides the Volkswagen dealer?
I'm going on to Phoenix, Arizona.
Are you living in these different places, or are you just visiting?
No, just driving around.
Oh, you're just driving around. What do you just sleep in the car?
When it's warm enough, I do, yeah.
Yeah. You won't be able to do that for a while.
So where have you been, and what's been the most interesting thing that you've seen?
The most interesting place I've seen is the Grand Canyon.
So wait a minute. So you were in Arizona to see the Grand Canyon, and you came to Vermont. Now you're going back to Arizona.
Yeah, I like it back there.
Really? How long you been here?
I've been here for 6 months.
Really? Do you have a visa or something?
Oh, no. I married an American.
Ah.
You had to get married to come here.
Yeah.
What, are you crazy?
So is she along on this adventure, or did she throw you out of the house?
She's right beside me.
She is.
Yeah, well, I'll get her to shove the car when it doesn't start, all right?
Oh, that's happened too?
No, I'm only kidding.
Oh, all right.
Okay.
Well, good luck, Patrick.
All right, thanks for that.
Enjoy your journey.
I will do.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
888-CAR-TALK.
It's an interesting thing to do, isn't it?
Yes.
Go somewhere and drive around.
Yeah.
It's a good way to do it.
Must be independently wealthy.
Yeah, I was just going to say, where do you get the money to do that?
I don't know.
We're a little older than him, and we can't do it.
I wish you would.
I'll
buy the car for you.
Lend me a couple of bucks.
I'll get you an '03 bug. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. A lawyer on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. It's Mary from Minnesota.
Hi, Mary from Minnesota.
Minnesota.
What's going on?
I have a 91 Ford Ranger that has a dirty oil cap, and I need your help with this.
Dirty oil cap.
There's a yellow scum on the inside of this cap in the last 6 weeks. I bought this old tank, this rusty Ford Ranger, for $1,000, and I thought it would promptly die in a few weeks. But it's lasted 2 years. And it doesn't leak oil, but all of a sudden in the last 6 weeks, it started to use more oil. And I listen to you guys, and I have this small tank in the back of oil, and I just keep adding oil, but it seems to be using
more
and
more. What do you have back there, the Exxon Valdez?
Yes. You know, my daughter won't ride the truck with me, but it gets, 24 miles to the gallon, and I commute a little bit with it, and I put new tires on this week, and it just won't die. But all of a sudden, I'm seeing this yellow scum on top of the oil cap.
It reminds me of Tommy's 56 Chevy. He got 24 miles to the gallon of oil. He was buying that re-refined stuff.
Hey, don't make fun of that car. That was a car.
Anyway, so I'm sorry. So you've been adding how much oil to it?
Well, it would use about a quart every 1,500 miles, and now it's, down to 800 to 1,000 miles. It's using more and more oil, and I'm thinking, is this byproduct of it burning oil, or is... See, I have a 14-year-old daughter who hates this truck. She thinks I should buy a new one and add to the economy. I'm worried that she might be, like, spraying, foaming bubbles or something inside there. Because I came in the house the other day and I said, I'm really concerned about my truck. She goes, see, that's a good reason to get rid of it, Mom. It's obviously burning more oil, but I don't know why.
But do you know if it's not leaking?
Yes, it's not leaking at all. There's no stain whatsoever.
And how many miles are on this gem?
Well, I bought it with 153,000, and now has 183,000.
That's wonderful. Well, it's entitled to have any kind of crud on the oil filler cap that it wants at 183,000, and that's water that's on that thing.
Oh, okay.
And it could come from a variety of sources. It could be just that you haven't changed the oil often enough, or you're taking much shorter trips than you had been taking, and the water never gets a chance to leave the system. In order for water that collects in the oil to get pushed out...
It's got to get hot.
Exactly. The engine has to get to operating temperature. More importantly, the oil does. And that water leaves the crankcase through the crankcase ventilation system. But if it doesn't leave, it condenses on the cool filler cap.
Ah.
Are you doing real short trips now, or much shorter trips than before?
Well, in town, yes. To be honest with you, my tires weren't very good. I thought it was going to die, so I didn't put new tires on. Of course, it just snowed here in Minnesota. So I was kind of hesitating and not using it long distances because I didn't want to get stuck on the roads with bad tires.
I think if you cleaned off that crud and you started driving, and not that you should if you don't need to, but if you were to drive it on the highway more than you drive it in the town, then the yellow crud would disappear.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, it's from an internal leak and it's coolant that's mixing in with your oil, in which case you would notice it on your dipstick eventually.
Okay.
So if you pull the dipstick out and it looks like a coffee milkshake...
Then you're in trouble.
Then you're in deep doo-doo. Then you stick it right back in and do what your daughter told you to do. Get rid of it.
Okay.
But if it's only confined to the cap, you're good to
Forget
go, Mary.
It.
All righty.
All right?
Sounds great, guys.
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about a thing.
Clean that cap off and don't look anymore.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Look, add your oil in the dark. See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, guys.
Hi. Who's this?
This is Marshall from Texas.
Whereabouts in Texas?
Well, I'm actually supposed to be in Houston, but for work reasons, I'm currently calling you from Gonzales.
Gonzales?
Huh.
I don't know what Gonzales is, but I imagine it's not too far from Houston.
Well, if you see a movie about the Alamo, then you'll know.
Well, we know a lot about the Alamo.
Well?
We know that the Alamo has been moved.
You bet you didn't know that.
You didn't know that, did you?
I did not know that.
Well, in fact, we're the only ones who know it.
It's our own theory.
Right. In fact, no, it got moved, and that's why Santa Ana didn't find it right away.
Ah.
So what's up, man?
Well, I've got a three-year-old, a 2001 Toyota Highlander, and a golf ball, and the three of them came to an unfortunate meeting. The golf ball is now in the muffler.
Really?
And, yeah. And I don't know what, if anything, I should do about it. I called our regular mechanic, and after they stopped laughing, which took a while, they seemed to have some kind of huddle on the phone, and they came back and said, yeah, probably okay.
So your kid put the golf ball in the tailpipe.
Yeah, the wife is trying to steer him down a path away from full contact sports. So he was out there with his little golf club and a regulation golf ball.
Yeah.
And I don't know what something went through his head, and he picked up the golf ball. And on the Highlander, the tailpipe's only about 10 inches long, so it doesn't take that much effort to permanently make an addition to the muffler.
So during the time that it's been in there, you've been driving it.
Yeah, well, we immediately fired it up just to see if anything interesting would come out, and nothing happened. And then we toyed with the idea of sticking a shop vac down there and trying to draw it out, and I thought that probably nothing good could come of that.
No, nothing. We had a puzzle about that some years ago where somebody blew a car up doing that, but that's another...
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I've been driving it around, and as far as I know, no flaming golf balls have come out of the back end, and I can't hear anything.
And you're sure it's in there, and it didn't come out?
As far as I know, it's still in there.
So how
it's hard to believe that, but...
I think once it made its way past the point where the tailpipe is attached to the muffler,
yeah,
then it fell into the body of the muffler amongst the baffles. I would leave it in there.
And it's okay?
Well, I mean,
it's not stopping anything from happening. I mean, when it's running, does it run smoothly?
Yeah.
Does it have plenty of power?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you put your hand near that tailpipe, it feels you feel the exhaust coming out?
Yeah, the exhaust is still coming out.
Yeah, I think it's in a place.
Yeah, it's in a place where it's not blocking anything.
The worst case scenario would have been this, Marshall. If he had found something to stick in there, and if he's listening, I'm sure he'd start working on this tomorrow. If he can find something to stick in there that's the exact diameter of the tailpipe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you wedge something in there like a potato.
Yeah. It'll stay in one place and stay
then
there forever.
It'll restrict the flow of exhaust, and the thing won't start at all. Or you could get something that was so close to fitting perfectly that it let a very little bit of exhaust out, and the power would be reduced by like 80 or 90%. But I think the fact that this thing went all the way into the muffler, and now it's just in there, and it's just another baffle.
Yeah.
It's just another one of the baffles that the exhaust has to go around, and I don't think it's going to do anything. Eventually, it'll either melt or the muffler will rust out and have to get thrown away. And when you do replace the muffler, you're going to have to, what, cut it open?
That leads to a follow-up question.
Yeah.
How many golf balls can go in there before it does become a problem?
That's
I think two would be the answer.
No, I bet you could put 50 golf balls in there.
Well, it would be interesting to do a little research.
Well, look, you don't want to put a 50 brand-new Titleist in there. You want to go to the driving range and get up the biggest bucket of balls you can and just keep stuffing them in until the thing don't start. Let us know. In the interest of science, I think you have to do this, Marshall.
I'm on board. I'll do it.
Good luck, man.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye. All right. Look, it's time for us to take a short break.
And when we come back, will you be regaling us with a tantalizing tale of wit and intrigue? A stunning work of conundral genius?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let me rephrase that. You got a puzzler?
Yes.
Good enough.
Well, and this week's puzzler happens to be from my travel and leisure series.
Excellent. We'll be back with my brother's new puzzler and more of your car questions, too. So please stay tuned.
I danced the whole night long at my high school reunion. Sang my new hit song at my high school reunion. So nothing could go wrong at my high school reunion. But heading out the door, they saw my Plymouth Belvedere. Plymouth Belvedere, yeah, a Plymouth Belvedere. Rusty, broken down, that car is killing my career. But to give it up would devastate my poor old daddy dear. So I've got to keep on driving that Plymouth Belvedere.
And even though the National Mummy Association lobbies for tighter ear-wrapping standards whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio. Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and, of course, the new Puzzler.
I can hardly wait.
Well, this came through recently.
Yeah.
'03. From someone named Bert Fury. Here it is. You ready?
Yeah.
One day, I pulled into a gas station just off I-85 outside of the historic village of Hillsboro, North Carolina, where I live. As I began to pump gas, I glanced over at the gentleman at the next pump and observed something that led me to believe he was not from the state of North Carolina.
Mm.
In addition, I knew immediately what state he was from. He was about to speak to me, but I spoke up first and said, "Let me guess, you're from..."
Blank.
Blank.
Yeah.
"Yes," he replied. "How did you know that?"
"I looked at your number plate."
The Puzzler is, what did I observe and what state was he from? Now, I did not see his license plate.
Oh, you didn't.
Or inspection sticker or other marking on his car that would give me any clue as to what state he was from. Nor was he wearing any clothing. He was wearing clothing. I have no clothing such as a baseball cap or college sweatshirt that would have led me to believe he was from a certain state. So the question is, without seeing any of the typical things that would give away the state of yeah. his residence, how did I know where he was from, and why did I know? How did I know it?
Now, you're going to give us a hint, like, did you see something on him or on his car?
No, it was something he did.
Oh, something he did.
It wasn't something on his car, and it wasn't something on him. So, you know.
Something he did.
Right. Okay. And he wasn't singing, "I love New York," or something stupid like that. But it was something that he did. Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on the underside of a Jet JWL 1642 Pro wood lathe with solid cast iron bed and legs, 16-inch swing, 42-inch turning capacity, infinite spindle speeds, 36 indexing positions, and digital readout, along with a prefabricated 18x40 standalone timber frame workshop. Lathes are noisy. You need the workshop to house them. And send it all to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
And if you have a car question for us, we're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Yeah, hi. This is Scott calling from Kingston, Ontario, Canada.
Scott from Kingston, Ontario.
Yes, correct.
What's going on, man?
Well, in a nutshell, I have a question in regards to, it's kind of an ongoing dispute I've been having with my wife in terms of how she does her driving. So, in a nutshell, basically when she's driving down the road and I'm the passenger, on occasions when she feels she has to slam on the brakes immediately, for some bizarre reason, she will reach over with her right hand and put it across my chest, thinking that...
You're a 9-year-old.
That or she's going to save me from going through the windscreen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she says this, or she does this, and she tells me that she does this because she loves me.
Yeah.
And my point to her is when she does this, I say, well, if you really do love me, keep your hands on the wheel.
Aha.
So this dispute's been going on for quite a while, and one of her reasons why she says it is because her mother does it. And I love both of them. I mean, her mother's great, my wife is great, but however, I think she uses that as a crutch just to offset the fact that she's been doing this all these years and thinks it's going to save my life. But
well, I think you can prove to her that it's not going to save your life.
Okay.
You find yourself a place where there's no traffic whatsoever.
Yeah.
Take your seatbelt off.
Yeah.
And tell her to drive along at 20 miles an hour and then slam on the brake and put her arm out in front of you.
And your head's
going to go. And your head's going to go right through the windshield. Because she hasn't got a snowball's chance of holding you there with her arm.
Yeah, no, you know where this came from? This came from the era before there were seatbelts.
Before there were any seatbelts.
And if you had a child sitting in that seat, of course, instinctually, you would reach across.
And hold
the child.
And save the kid's life.
And save the kid's life. Otherwise, the kid would have to get his head smashed against those metal dashboards that cars in the 40s and 50s had.
Yeah.
But, that you know, like a lot of things that were well-intentioned, it no longer is necessary. In fact, the seatbelt that you're wearing is going to do a 1,000 times better job than she could ever do. And you should, you know, most people don't realize how well the seatbelt works because they've never had an accident or had occasion to actually deploy the seatbelt.
Okay.
Is so, your wife 60 or 70 years old?
No, not even close. Half of that.
Well, it's interesting. I'm surprised that she got this theory somehow.
And the safety of both of you will be served better by her keeping both hands on the steering wheel. She might be able to avert a disaster.
When she was a little kid.
Her mother did it to her.
My thoughts exactly so.
Yes,
yeah.
I think you should turn the tables on her. When she slams on the brakes, you should reach over to her. And she'll realize how stupid that is, and she'll stop doing it.
Or else I can just give her my hockey equipment, and she can wear that while I'm driving.
Yeah, right.
Well, we all wear football helmets here when we drive. I don't know what you guys do in
Especially
Canada.
Especially when my brother's driving.
See you, Scott.
All right, thanks.
Good luck.
All right, bye-bye.
Hey, look, before we take another call.
What?
I've got a little something I need to get off my chest.
Oh, geez. Look, I'm sorry about your car, okay? You were away for the weekend. You weren't using it, and the dog looked like he was housebroken.
I wasn't talking about that.
Oh, you weren't?
No, but now I know who owes me $100 for cleaning the car. No, I want to talk about the gasoline tax.
Oh, no.
Again.
Don't start with that. Last time you proposed a gas tax, we got 5,000 letters calling us pinkos, commies, morons.
Well, we're not pinkos or commies.
No, we're not.
No, not by a long shot. Morons, well, the jury's still out on that. But look, I think it's an idea whose time has come. And I know that most politicians have been too wussy to do it. They're all afraid about talking about taxes. But I think the logic of raising the gasoline tax right now is unassailable.
Well, you may be right.
Well, here's how it works. When gasoline was $4 a gallon, everybody cried, right? $4!
Not me. I just siphoned the stuff out of your car.
Aha! That's why my mileage went down to 3 miles a gallon. Look, gasoline is now less than $2 a gallon. So there's never been a better time to do this. I mean, if we added a 50-cent national gasoline tax right now, and gas costs, say, $2.50 a gallon, would that be the end of the world? $4 a gallon gas wasn't the end of the world. $2.50 gas certainly wouldn't be, right?
Well, in fact, it might remind people to drive a little less.
Exactly. We know that the higher the price of gas, and this has been proven in the last few months, the less people drive. You know, they use public transportation, they carpool, da-da-da-da-da.
They don't go to work.
The more fuel-efficient cars they buy, and the more fuel-efficient cars get manufactured. So a gas tax reduces demand for oil, and reduced demand keeps the price low.
Right. Supplier and the demander.
And everyone remembers that from Economics 101. But wait, there's more. The gas tax does even more than this.
What are you, Rumpelpeel? Are you selling spray on hair or what? You selling the pocket fisherman?
No, but I did order that chicken rotisserie thing. Just set it and forget it. But I used your credit card.
Yeah, good.
No. This is serious. Now, the gas tax does far more than just reduce demand. If we put a 50-cent a gallon tax on gasoline, it would generate, you ready? Between $50 and $100 billion every year for the Treasury.
Oh, and what's our cut of that?
we don't get a cut. But the money could be used to help rebuild our crumbling roads and bridges, right? They're in bad shape. And, more importantly, to develop new technologies for more fuel-efficient cars, further decreasing demand for oil. Now, the more fuel-efficient the cars are, the more the demand goes down, right?
Exactly.
So this is our way to get on the wagon and stop sending money out of the country to some countries that don't like us too much and achieve energy independence. I mean, that's what we've been talking about for years. We want to achieve energy independence. Well, this is one of the ways you do it, by developing new technologies.
I mean, that's nice and all, but you still have to cut me in on the $50 billion if you want me on board.
Oh, I do. Well, here's the final piece of the puzzle, the cherry on the sundae, so to speak.
Oh, you mean is this where we get our cut?
Oh, bite me, pistol puss. No, the other thing that the gas tax revenue could fund is, you ready for this? I think this is the brilliant thing. You're going to love it.
The coup de grace.
This would fund high-speed train infrastructure between major cities. And who would build all of those new high-tech, high-speed trains that we'd need?
The Chinese?
Jeez, I hadn't thought of the Chinese. Not a bad idea. No! GM and Ford and maybe even Chrysler. We'd help them start mass transit divisions in their companies and convert some of those factories from building inefficient gas hogs, which they're not going to sell, to building those high-speed trains. I mean, the head of Ford used to run Boeing. He's done planes, automobiles. You think he can't do trains?
Frank, this is absolutely brilliant. I'm shocked.
So I'm sick of people whining about a lousy 50-cent a gallon tax on gasoline. Come on. I think the idea's time has come, and I call on all non-wussy politicians, even the wussy ones, to get in line with me and stand with me. I'm calling on the president-elect, too, because our country needs this.
Woof!
I have spoken.
You feel better now?
Yes, I do. I do.
You want some of the pills you gave me when I used to rant and rave all the time?
No, I don't want no stinking pills. Hey, by the way, I should mention, in the interest of full financial disclosure, and I thought I was going to make a killing, so I recently purchased stock in both GM and Ford.
You did? You stupid.
Well, you know, I think it's important, since you and I have done our fair share of driving down their stock price over the years, and deservedly so.
They did deserve it.
I thought it was only right in their hour of need that we make this magnanimous gesture and, you know, buy their stock.
What about Chrysler? You bought Ford, you bought GM, but not Chrysler?
Well, magnanimity has its limits, doesn't it? 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk. I feel a lot better now.
Hi, this is Christine calling from Bellingham, Washington.
Hi, Christine.
With a K?
With a C-H.
C-H.
From Bellingham.
Bellingham.
Where's Bellingham?
Close to Canada.
It's the home of Grizzly Tools.
That's right.
Yes.
I work right next to grizzly.com.
Oh, really?
No kidding.
I do.
Can you sneak anything out at night? I need a sander.
I haven't tried. Funny.
Not so funny. So anyway, Christine, what's up?
Okay, when I drive my car, it's a 2006 Fusion Ford.
Okay.
And anytime I go above 40 miles an hour, it makes this very freak out thunk sound, and it freaks me out. I pull my foot off the gas, and then I just try to really gingerly accelerate from that point.
So you're driving along, and you're stepping on the gas. You get to 40 miles an hour.
Well, it's not if I go up to 40. It's usually when if I'm steady at 40, if I'm behind a car, and I go to accelerate to, like, pass a car.
Yeah.
It's usually at those speeds that it'll do that.
What if you're going 45? Is it fine?
Well, no, it's not. It just doesn't happen below 40, I've noticed. It's not usually at 40 or not. It's if I'm at a steady speed, whether it's 40 or 50 or whatever, and I've accelerated to that point just fine, and now I'm driving along at a nice steady speed. Oh, I need to pass this person.
It's when you accelerate
it's when you
hard.
Accelerate hard. Okay.
Bingo.
Bingo. Aha. Bingo. Well, it could be. What does it sound like it's coming from? In front of you? Underneath you?
Or behind you?
Underneath me.
Okay. Well, I thought at first that it was your transmission, that it was a harsh shift. But because it can happen at 50 miles an hour, it still could be. It could be that your transmission is downshifting. Now, if you're going along at 50 and you're in fourth gear, I imagine this is an automatic.
Yes, it is.
And you're in fourth speed and you stomp on the gas, it will downshift to third, and that could be the thunking noise. That's one possibility.
Okay.
But you know what I think it is? If you say it's coming from underneath you, I bet you there's a coupling, a flexible joint on your exhaust system. You know, because this is a front-wheel drive car with what's called a transverse-mounted engine. And for that reason, the exhaust system must attach to the manifold. And when you accelerate and the engine moves side to side, this exhaust system must flex. Otherwise, it will break. And there's a coupling someplace under there that flexes with that acceleration. You can get this boonk.
Okay.
But if you take this to your mechanic, he can put it up on the lift and go through this whole process, and he can be underneath seeing exactly what happens.
Okay. And is this an expensive fix or a not-so-expensive fix?
Well, it might not be an expensive fix. You may be covered by warranty.
Well, I did buy an extended warranty.
Oh, you did?
I did.
And there may even be a bulletin on this, you know, or some kind of a campaign. If there's a problem that is widespread, they'll usually fix it without trying to charge you too much.
So you should go. You got to go directly to the place where you bought it.
Or the dealer. I'm going to take it to the dealer.
You're going to go to some Ford dealer. You don't have to go to the Ford dealer from whom you bought it, but you're going to go
any
to
Ford
some
dealer.
Ford dealer.
Yeah, that'd be kind of hard because that's in another state.
Oh,
yeah,
you moved.
Oh, what happened?
Yeah. So, we moved.
You moved. Okay.
We don't want to know. We don't want to know. I'm sure it was ugly. Anyway, take it to the Ford dealer and describe to them what's happening. Take them for a test drive because you can reproduce it at will, can't
you?
Oh,
yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's part of the exhaust system that's flexing. And maybe maybe there's a loose bolt or something, and it's making this noise.
Okay.
Or it's a motor mount. It sounds like it's something pretty benign.
Yeah.
Don't worry. They'll find
a way. When you moved, did your husband move with you?
Yes, he did.
Ah, that's good.
You said we didn't know if it was you and the dog.
Yeah, actually, it was me and the dogs first, and then they
and
came
then up, him. And then, yeah.
Oh, then he missed you, guy. He missed the dog. He decided to come along. See you, Christine.
Thanks so much. Have a good day.
Bye, you too. Bye-bye. Well, it's happened again. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are Louis Cronin, the Barbarian, and David the Calves of Belleville Green. Our senior web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our production assistant is Aaron Wax. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisors, just back from the Abilene, Ovaltine, Lima Bean, Salad Green, Jimmy Dean, Brewed Caffeine, Dairy Queen, Lean Cuisine, and Melamine, Make the Scene, Lunch Routine, is John Bosley Lawler.
Very well done.
Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our second shift meteorologist is Cloudy Overnight. Our food taster is Howard M. Burgers. Our class attendance monitor is Julie Verley. Our director of preventive maintenance is Oscar Ruitt. Our snowboarding instructor from Sweden is Soren DeKeister. Tommy's personal psychiatrist is Manny Luce Cruz. Our optometric firm is CFI Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. The head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Louis Dewey, known to the whiskey-scented Santas in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. Don't drive like my brother, please.
Drive like my brother, please.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. CDs of the show, which is number 851, along with Car Talk clothing, audio collections, and other Car Talk gifts, are available at 888-CAR-JUNK or by going to the Shameless Commerce Division of our website, cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, we tell you how to get in one more tax deduction before the end of the year.
You're not still trying to claim our producers as dependents, are you?
No. I write them off as gambling losses. I'm talking about donating a car.
Oh, yeah. You know, by donating your car to this station instead of trading it in, you can help support your favorite public radio programs, nail down a deduction for next April, and stop my brother from snooping around your driveway at night.
I was just looking.
To find out how to donate your car, check out the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program.
You can always get there from our website, cartalk.com, and thanks.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though NPR's new president warns that our show will probably get worse before it gets better, whenever she hears us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.